Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. It's a rather damp Monday evening, but Edwin's here nevertheless. Hi, Edwin.
Buonanotte, Signor Martini. Come stai?
Oh, very good. I assume this is in the light of our new Prime Minister.
Well, yeah, that's my the very, very reserves, faint reserves of picking up Italian from my stepmother. So, we're in the family now. It's all in the family, Martin. It's all in the family. It's one big happy family.
Well, I can say cappuccino. That's about it.
Well, yeah, signori, buongiorno. Whatever rocks your fancy, Martin. But I tell you what hasn't rocked the fancy of the constituents of the hardcore voters out there is the fact that the main political parties are broken, Martin. They are broken. I mean, we've got a government now with the, 30 or 32%?
It's the lowest for almost ever, right? So that, you know, they got in, but only by a squeak, and roughly 30% is now non-aligned, which is the biggest it's been ever.
Well, there were notions at one stage that it's the least amount of votes, but yet we've got the a party that's received the least amount of votes, and yet it's governing the country. I mean, it is 2022 after all, Martin. We're not even halfway.
Well, this is democracy at work, you know. That's how it works. But the interesting question is, I wonder what proportion of the votes were actually not officially counted, you know, because if you don't actually do everything right, you don't actually get counted. I heard somewhere that there's about 8% of non-complying votes just in New South Wales.
And that is phenomenal. But then again, we're going to be talking about what the Richard Chatterers have been saying with regards to their position. It seems like the Conservative Party forgot about them as well. I think there's a lot of communities out there that are hurting, and they just basically threw their hands up in the air. And unlike others that we try to encourage and say, look, go and vote, have your say, do something about it. I mean, I really do believe a lot of them just threw their hands up in the air. On the day, and it just, for me, I don't know about you, Martin, but for me, I'm not politically inclined or anything like that. But it just seems that how to vote, the way to vote, how to do it, it's for me, I just find it confusing, to say the least. I find it confusing, let alone for a lot of other people out there.
I have to confess that in my case, I started from the who do I not want to vote for, right, rather than who do I want to vote for. So that was how I did it. So there were some people I crossed off the list, and whoever was left, I sort of put them in a rough order. But no, it isn't simple. And, you know, if English isn't your first language, and if you're not totally clear about how this thing works, you can quite easily end up, you know, not doing what you want to do. Or as you say, people just said, nah, can't be fussed. I'm not going to bother. So, you know, forced to turn up, but doesn't mean I have to vote.
Yeah, and it's a real shame. It really is a shame. But it is what it is. We are here now. We've been talking about it for a number of weeks, if not months, and here we are. But at the end of the day, what it confirms to me is that the major parties have really forgotten about the SMEs. Yep. They've forgotten about the SMEs. They've forgotten about the real issues around housing affordability, issues around, more importantly, around rental affordability.
It's a big deal.
Worker health and wage protection, as well as the country's sustainability moving forward. How are we going to look after ourselves? America, the latest in America, baby formula shortages, all sorts of shortages, and a lot of the trucking companies are now warning each other as to what part of each separate state not to go through because petrol pumps or the bowsers are empty. They've got no diesel. It's just a wait and see when we're going to end up with all that all that mess here in Australia. And perhaps that is why the reason why people just didn't vote, put the vote elsewhere, and told the major parties, you know what, they put the middle finger up in the air and said, you know, and took that position.
Yes, democracy in action, unfortunately. And of course, the rubber's going to hit the road now in terms of what they're going to do over the next 3 years. I sort of had a slight chuckle to myself because the first thing that Arbo did was to leave the country.
Yeah, look, it is rather interesting. We're going to see what these the new frontier holds for us, the position with China, our position with America. Are we going to stand firm with America? Or are we going to tread our own course or basically forge our own path into the future? Or are we going to be the America's little bitch, being dragged along behind on a chain. But at the end of the day, Martin, as they say in South America, this is it. This is where we've made the marriage vows, and the makeup comes off, and the protein powder is put to the side, and this is where you meet your bride or you meet your husband, you meet your partner after all the cajoling, all the caressing, and all the all the I love you, darlings, before you get to the altar and say I do. This is it. It's we're now married for the next 3 to 4 years.
Reality dawns, and as I put out a tweet today saying, I wonder when they will open the migration taps. And in fact, Jim Chalmers already mentioned it today, right? Migrations, it's going to happen.
Yeah, and look, but just going back a little bit with regard to the election and what are the things that we've said. I mean, last week alone, I said that the biggest javelin that that the Libs got, I think, was the last media reports with regards to petrol prices going up and just the costs of living. But I really think the biggest of all was when you're out there in the political campaign, Martin. You really got to go out there and give it all, don't you? Because I mean, I put out a tweet, directed it at ScoMo and said, mate, this is you haven't obviously he hasn't bought property recently, or he's got other people buying for him, or maybe it's his missus that's buying the property. I don't know, but he's obviously not. He hasn't really gone out there and done the real hard yards. And gone out to an auction campaign recently, and I said to him, mate, when Albo came in with a 40%, you should have come in with 50, And when the Greens come in with a million properties on offer, mate, you got to up the bid straight away. Put your foot down, Let them know who's boss. They should have come up with a million, 1,020,000 homes that you're going to build. Yeah, as they say, Martin, it's better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. So in this case, with politicians, you just go out there and promise, and afterwards, when you get the steering wheel again, when you get the helm, you just deny, and if that all fails, you blame the opposition, and if that fails, you blame Putin. Who would have won? He would have won, Martin. I'm convinced.
Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Yes, just up the bid a bit more, It's but mind you, maybe mowing down that little kid didn't help either.
No, I think was he a plant? Was he a Russian plant?
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Yeah, well, interesting times we live in, huh?
Yeah, it is, Martin. It is, and look, as I said before, I think one of the things is the majors just forgot about the different communities. Too focused on themselves. Too focused on the bloody personalities. Yeah, seriously, elections are now won and lost on personalities rather than policy. How long have we been asleep for, Martin?
Well, it's more and more like a US style campaign. But I said about 6 weeks ago, this is going to be a content-free election, right? And it pretty much was in terms of actually, real, genuine policies that would actually make a difference to the future. They were just fiddling around the edge, and it was all about the positions in terms of getting the right shots and saying the right things and being asked the right questions. It was all manipulated. So I'm afraid that there's very little reality And as you say, what will happen now is that they'll be able to turn around and say, oh, well, the books are much worse than I thought. So that means we've got to do things differently, right? So watch the budget in September when that comes down. And as I say, migration up, you know, they'll have to change some of the tax plans that they had and other things. And the international situation is making it very hard to do many things. And I think that's the other thing that we didn't really get any sense of, right? It's as though we can live in this splendid isolated bubble called Australia, when in fact there's a real world out there with, you know, famine and pestilence and war and all those things. And the fact is, I don't know whether you saw today, that the UK has now announced that anybody who's been exposed to the monkey thing has now to isolate for 3 weeks.
But yeah, I did read that, Martin. And yeah, these King Kong pox, it's just the next phenomenon. But we talked about it 3 months ago, did we not?
We had the strategies laid out. We had it all laid out, when we knew what was coming.
Yeah, and I mean, our WeChat chatters were already warning us. They were telling us. And look, we spoke about famine. We spoke about food shortages. We spoke about that. I mean, it's incredible how the Chinese, if you recall, over 12 months ago, we were saying, what were the main topics of discussion with the commentators over in China, with from our WeChat chatters? They were telling the people, prepare for war, prepare for famine. And where are we now? Where are they now? They're in that position now. Admittedly, a lot of people didn't follow the internal plan either, because they were caught with their pants down now with the current lockdowns. But yeah, the party there turned around and saying, "Listen, we told you so." And likewise here. We're the voice in the wilderness, Martin. And as much as a lot of people say, why do you talk so much about China? Why do you talk about the WeChat chatters? Why do you talk about this? Why do you talk about that? Well, if we don't talk about it, if you don't understand what's happening in the greater globe, what's happening with geopolitics, what's happening globally in regards to the economy, how the hell are you going to find out what's going to happen or know or navigate through future property prices, drops, gains or falls, or the rental market and that? If you're not going to pay attention to that, and if you think that that's not going to influence the value of your property or your next door neighbor's property or the one across the road, well, you got rocks in your head. And this is, we are where we are, because it's all playing out. How long have you and Tarek been talking about, supply chain issues and shortages and everything else along those lines? And you see the chats on Twitter or on different social media platforms, the commentary on your podcast and everything else. And some people are there. What would you say? Lack of knowledge, so much lack of knowledge and ignorance in trying to make what they think and what they think are sensible arguments to what we're trying to tell them. They don't get it. They're still living in the now, and they're still living in the instant the world of instant gratification, the world of the instant coffee, if I'm hungry, I'm going to open, stand up, walk to the kitchen, open the fridge, and pull something out, or get something delivered, or get in the car and go through a drive-through McDonald's. Wait until all that stops, like it's stopping in the rest of the world. Wait until all that comes to pass here, and then we're going to have some serious discussions around what else is of value. Like you and I have been saying, and what this podcast is all about, is the value of property, accommodation, sustainable living, comfortable living standards that the government's forgotten about us, policies that the government's forgot about, comfortable living standards and sustainable living standards that they've forgotten about us for the last 2-3 decades. That's what we're all about. But we've got to look at all these things in order to put all these jigsaw puzzle together to try and navigate through this torrent that we're going through at the moment, and it's only going to get worse, mate. Unfortunately, and I'm sad to say that it's only going to get worse before we can get better. It has to be fully broken before you can mend it.
Absolutely. Well, I guess on that front, we should go and have another tap into the WeChat chat chatters, right? Because they've got more to say.
Yeah. Look, it is, and again. One of the main source of the WeChat chatters. You've you've met them and you can understand where they're coming from as well. And sometimes, as they keep on saying to us over and over again, is don't look at what's put out over in China and don't look at it with Western eyes. You've got to really look at it from their perspective, their understanding of the culture, their understanding of the history, their understanding of the politics, and also the understanding of the fact that that Mandarin, which is the language that's predominantly spoken there, and the main threat, it's very ambiguous. So you've got to understand what is it that they're really trying to say. More to the point, what I've learned over the years is it's not so much what they're trying to say or what the politicians there are saying; it's what they're not saying that you've got to pay more attention and closer attention to. And in this case, what they're saying and what some people have got DM'd me and try to take me to task on Twitter with regards to the WeChat chat is missing it altogether. And I say, no, my friend, it's not that. It's we don't look at our WeChat chatters don't look at the articles or the commentary from China with Western eyes. They look at it with local eyes because they understand the culture, they understand the history and everything else that comes with it. So when just because you get Bloomberg saying China's Communist Party has issued rules barring senior officials from holding significant assets abroad, and then all of a sudden that's it. I got DM'd like there was no tomorrow, and I got people try to take me over the coals and saying I was wrong. Yeah, look, it's not just about that. It's what it's not saying. It's not telling you that they've stopped everybody. It's really saying to you, okay, we're going to hold the senior officials, but the elites can still go and do whatever they want to do. The junior officials can still go and do whatever they want to do, and also those with political connections and otherwise, with a big brown paper bag, can also do whatever they want to do. So you've got to pay close attention to that to really fully understand how migration from that sort of things, or an influx of people coming over with a shitload of money into Australia, how that's also going to influence and impact property prices here. Albeit in the near future, or perhaps in 3 months or in 6 months. So you've got to take that into account, apart from other things as well, Martin, economically that impacts us. And again, as we've been saying, the immigration is not necessarily just coming from China, but it's going to come from every other part of the world that we may not even be aware of, that there's people coming or eyeing out Australia, regardless of what some of the locals sadly think that Australia is not a country to be in, and I want to renounce the citizenship here. We think otherwise. I think otherwise. It's still the best country in the world. It's still the best place to continue to live a life and to feel a lot secure in. I don't know about you, but that's the position that I take. That's a local chatter over there in China, Martin.
Well, I'm a very fervent believer in Australia and the future of Australia, if we can do things right? So what I get frustrated about is we keep making the wrong political decision and taking us into blind alleys, but the potential for Australia on so many fronts is huge, and I want to be part of helping to make that come true. But going back to the WeChat chat, when it's definitively said in the Wall Street Journal that, they're barring of senior officials from doing whatever, right? As you say, you've got to actually really understand it from a different lens, and it's not what it appears to be. And I think again and again we find that. So understanding the nuances and understanding it in local speak, as it were, is really, really important.
Yeah, and the other thing that people have got to understand it, maybe that they're not aware of, or they haven't come across articles. At the moment, there's a huge political storm happening internally as well within the party. So you got the Z supporters and you got the Lee supporters, and it's a wait and see to see what really happens. And it's not going to happen. We won't know exactly how China's going to move forward or the CCP is going to move forward post November until that huge committee meeting that happens in November is concluded, and they either stamp Xi or stamp Li moving forward, and that's going to change and that's going to change our landscape once again. One's a bigger supporter of Australia than the other. So there's so many balls at play, and it's just an observation, and we just got to keep an ear to the ground and keep those channels of communication open so that we can put it out there to our followers and viewers.
And it is interesting that China, the five-year rate was reduced by quite a lot last Friday, 15 basis points, I think, right? Which basically makes their mortgage rates cheaper than they were previously. So it's really weird that in Western economies we're talking about lifting rates and mortgage rates going up. In China, they're talking about mortgage rates going down.
Yeah, look, and all that, again, obviously everybody's tossing and jostling and pulling here, pulling left, pulling right. Moving targets everywhere. But if you just take one hard stance of things, you're going to miss it altogether. Like the coalition, like the Libs, missed the sentiment of the local WeChat chatterers, mate. They missed it by a mile.
Yeah, well, I wonder whether they believe that particular segment of the community was important, right? I don't know, but it seems to me that they miss something really important. And if you think about some of the areas around Sydney that we know quite well, that meant that there were very significant segments of the population that were completely disenfranchised by the guys who lost.
Well, exactly. And this is the thing. Once again, I think they believe that the whole community turned their back on the nation. It's not so much a turning the back on the nation as much as it is turning the back perhaps on the party or the CCP. And we've got the two different worlds. They understand, like a lot of small business operators and big business operators here in Australia understand, without the support of China, without the support, I mean, without them importing or exporting, whichever position you're taking here, to or from China, you know that your business is absolutely ruined. And this is the local Chinese community understood that very, very well. And I think the Liberal Party, as I put out that tweet directly to ScoMo as well, and to Dom, you really stop listening to the local community, to the local Chinese community, and perhaps they thought that they had it in the bag with them. And in actual fact, the WeChat chatters were going off over the weekend, saying that they did not vote for the Libs because they really got put to one side. They felt that the party left them behind. They didn't take their sentiment in consideration. Again, you got to understand, these people are here. They may have turned their back on the party, but they haven't necessarily turned their back on the families over there or the community over there that is helping them, or that the community that they are helping with the small businesses that they have here or the operations that they have here in sending money over there to keep them alive, to keep them healthy, to keep them in a home, to keep them with a solid education. So and a lot of the people here, a lot of the Chinese community here, a lot of businesses got closed down, and a lot of them were the Chinese takeaways and the fast food outlets, small convenience stores, and they took that to heart, unfortunately. And the major party just didn't listen to them, and they lost the vote. So that could have been a significant scalp. That they lost altogether, a prize that they lost altogether, and the majority just voted independent. They also don't have too much to say about the Labor Party, but that was sort of certainly let down.
Well, and it's worth noting that Keneally, of course, was parachuted into Western Sydney seat, right, when it culturally was not a very sensible thing to do. And in fact, so an independent who was more aligned with the culture in that area won. So again, it's another, you know, if you don't understand the locality and you don't understand the cultural norms within that locality, you're not going to actually make much momentum. And I think that's another important point. I think, again, there was an arrogance there about, you know, well, we'll impose this high flyer in, and it failed again. So once again, the message is, this is about community. It's about the roots. It's about understanding locality, understand what's important. And actually, if anything at all comes off the back of this election result, it's, to me, the importance of locality and community and local interests and those things. By the way, I think that's a good thing, because it means that the two-party machine hopefully is broken and will never be repaired, and we move into a different mode of operation. But for many people in the machine of politics, they've got no idea.
Exactly. And the other thing is, you know, if you're going to go and send out there giving leaflets in an ethnic community, for goodness sakes, if you're going to be chewing gum, chew with your mouth closed. That's such a bad look. There are certain cultural things that you just don't do. You might think it's okay in your home or in your own backyard or in your community, but hey, there's some stuff that's really gets under the skin with different communities, and that was something with the Vietnamese community that was spoken about. I mean, you know, through other social media platforms that I and other friends that I have in that. But now, going to the point of that, Martin, of the community, see how important it is, and see how people in that, we're sort of going back again to the 80s, early 90s era of community. Although it sort of happened in a way historically, but the community sort of communities congregating sort of died out, I believe, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it seems like, for me, from a property perspective and point of view, it seems to me that communities are once again gravitating to a mass in certain areas, more so. Like, I've seen this shift happen with the Blacktown LGA from the very Anglo community, to then morphing into a Filipino community, then to morphing into African community, and now it's morphed into an Iraqi community. The same thing you see in the Fairfield Liverpool LGA. You see these movements, but overall, what I'm noticing is it's sort of communities are sort of trying to be closer to each other, in particular the Asian communities and the Vietnamese. I mean, there was a stage where the Vietnamese wanted to spread out a bit more, but now with the Vietnamese friends and that we have and professionals that we congregate with or we talk with, they're all talking the same thing. They're all looking for properties for their families and friends, closer to Cabramatta, to your Kenley Heights, to those areas, to your Bonnie Rigs, where they feel safer, they feel more at home, because they're also believe that as a community they will be able to withstand any future economic downturns and any future unrest, because they will be able to support each other, in particular the elderly, the older generation that still struggle with the language.
Absolutely. Well, I think there's a very interesting change in the weather in terms of this community angle. And if you then overlay the political implications of that, that's why I think that this isn't just a one-off flash in the pan. I think that this marks a fundamental change in the direction of the community and also politics in Australia. So we'll see. And talking about trends and things, well, the numbers, look at the numbers. They're still, this isn't right. They're still going up.
They're still going up, and I'm sharing the Monday numbers from last week and this week's numbers, and they're stacking up higher. Just before we got onto the podcast, I had a quick look, and I didn't take a snapshot to send to you. There was another 70 or 72 more properties that had come on the market. We may see a bit of a pullback in the morning, tomorrow morning, but again, we're starting higher and higher each week. We just keep on breaking that ceiling, breaking that barrier. So there's as to how much higher it'll go, Who knows? The other interesting fact with regards to the numbers is, obviously from last week, the mainstream media cottoned on to our show and started talking about how low the auction the auction numbers were for last Saturday, and now Sydney's almost three times as many on sale by auction. So there's still a bit of a desperation out there for people to get out at the get out at the peak as they believe to as opposed to again pulling back. But one of the things that doesn't surprise me are the for sale numbers for apartments. They just keep on going north. They just keep on like your surname, mate. They just keep on going north.
Up. More than 9,000. And I was talking to somebody the other day who's been trying to sell an apartment up in North Ryde, unfortunately. They've been trying for 7 months to sell this thing, and they keep cutting the price and nothing happens. Right,
it's a race to the bottom.
It is, and they're getting to the point now where they're thinking, well, what do we do? Because we can't let this thing out. We can't sell it. We're still paying a mortgage. What do we do? I mean, it really is getting quite interesting. And the problem is, the reason they can't sell it is because there are so many others similarly in these high rise areas, very similar. All prices drifting lower, and so they're chasing each other south.
Yeah, and it's a reverse auction.
Exactly right. Exactly. Yeah. All right then. In terms of articles and things, we should talk about independent real estate valuer. Now, is there such a thing?
Yeah. Well, look, they're independent when you obviously contract them to do something for outside of the orders or the instructions given by the real estate agent by the bank. Now again, as you said, is there such a thing? Because obviously, if you're going to be instructing them, they're going to be inclined, regardless of what others say, they're going to be inclined to still give you a bit more of a favorable outcome than what they would otherwise if they did it. Did an evaluation willy-nilly for nobody, just for shits and giggles. But look, when a valuation, which I've had to do last year, contact a valuer and get one done, not for bank purposes, but for other reasons. I mean, they're coming in at $700, $750, and it is a lot of money when you're doing a one-off evaluation, but they're giving you a report that predominantly does hold weight in a court of law. So in the grand scheme of things, it's not really that much. But that's if you instruct them privately. If the banks instruct them, I mean, some values are only being paid $160 to $240 per valuation.
Yep.
And they're taking a much higher risk for a hell of a lot less money. And look, the interesting thing is, Martin, is this is something that I've been banging on about for, and George also has been banging on about for over 15 years, and that is, why can't a purchaser do a valuation of a property that a bank will accept outside of them only instructing the valuer to do a valuation based on a finance application in order to lend money. Well, we know why. You and I know why. And again, I've been taken to task on this. I've called all sorts of things. But I'm only telling you what the values themselves tell me. Yep. And I've only been saying over the years what the values themselves have shared with me in confidence. And what I've learned, in the 22 plus years that I've been in real estate, in the side of sales, so it's something that it's hard to explain to people because they don't understand it. And this is where we're running into a very cautious and very dangerous territory, because if you're buying by way of an auction campaign, because you've got no chance or hope in hell to get a valuation before you go and approach before you make your offer on the day. And there's a big difference between a market appraisal given to you by the real estate agent or an indicative valuation given to you by the mortgage broker that the bank has given them, ad hoc or as they call desktop valuations. You know, it's a different thing between that and a formal valuation. More to the point, once the banks find out exactly what your LVR is going to be, that determines, from what I've been told, not because I know this directly, but from what I've been told from valuers, that determines how the valuer is going to approach the property as well. Why else do they get the contract of sale? And why else do they get the instructions from the bank if it wasn't the case? I mean, that's just my side of the story.
Well, I think it's partly, Edwin, this thing called for sale valuation is not the same necessarily as a market valuation, right? So basically, from a bank's perspective, they're looking at it from a risk perspective, and they're basically saying, what is the downside here if things go wrong? And so things like, so what is the realistic for sale value? That tends to anchor things, particularly in the down market, right? If markets are running away, as they were, a year ago, they're going to be much, much more bullish. But it's very interesting that now a lot of banks have already dialed back how much they're prepared to lend at, what multiples they're prepared to lend at. And so your borrowing power, if you're applying for a new mortgage today, has already been reduced somewhere between 5 and 8%, even from where it was 2 months ago, right?
That's right.
Plus, the valuations are actually also being taken further back as well. So that is one of the reasons why we're starting to see home prices beginning to go the other way, because people can't actually now extend as much credit. The banks won't extend as much credit. The valuers are pulling the valuations down. So there is now a very significant gap between the, very simple valuation or proposition that you might get from a real estate agent or indeed from the vendor, report, compare with the real market activity that's going on if somebody's trying to buy. And this is where people get trapped often, because they actually go with a higher number and then they go to the bank and try and get a mortgage and discover that the bank isn't prepared to lend what they said they were going to lend even 2 months ago, right? So there's a difference between indicative and actually an agreed mortgage, for example. People are getting caught left, right and centre with all these shifting around at the moment. So my own view is, at the moment, if you're really going to be serious about a property, it's worth getting a completely independent and objective valuation. But you're dead right, that won't be used by the bank, right? Which is disgraceful. It should be, but it's not.
Yeah, it's not. And the only times, I mean, you can own it. It doesn't mean that the bank's going to use it. There have been other times when our clients have owned the valuations and the bank has accepted it, and that's usually when you're buying commercial property or development sites.
Yep. Different kettle of fish.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Different kettle of fish. But when it comes to residential property, it's chalk and cheese.
Yep.
And it's hard. And it's criminal. And this is something that needs to be really investigated, really needs looked at. It's funny because whatever agents are watching our show today, they'll know that when valuers are doing a valuation on a property, they'll call other agents around the area to get sales, because they can't see the actual sales, the immediate sales, within the expand of a week or 2 weeks. They can't see it because they're not disclosed, and they themselves have problems coming up with it. Again, you build relationships with valuers, you build the rapport with valuers, and they have the contacts as well. So they've got to do what they've got to do. But there's a lot of pressure, unnecessary pressure put on valuers, put on that industry, and they get very little for it. But that's the game. You just got to learn the rules in order to get in the ring. Otherwise, you will come out with a bleeding nose.
Yeah, an interesting observation from Tarek that we saw earlier on today, but he's highlighted the fact that realestate.com.au, they've started not now showing the price trends in the suburb profiles. People quite often used to look at those. They've disappeared. I wonder why that is.
Of course they disappear, and that is why that is why now they have to pump up REA need to pump up articles of of grandeur and those that those articles that basically put that form part of the the glitter and the stars and the finesse and the shebang and all that real estate is, Martin. So that's why we get these articles of that Steve Bellotti's Mossman masterpiece relaunches with a 36 to 38 million price guide. I mean, you've got to have these articles. Otherwise, people are going to get despondent about the great Australian dream.
Well, there must be thousands and thousands of people who are going to shell out $36 to $38 million, right? But actually, if you then peel back the onion, right, is this a case of overquoting or underquoting or what, Edwin? What's really going on?
Well, this is the thing, Martin. I mean, when you start peeling away, like you said, peeling away the onion, you know, when the makeup comes off and when the protein shakes, we stop taking protein shakes, the truth comes out, after the honeymoon. it's all smoke and mirrors. Yeah, well, look, when I started reading this article, because obviously I'm thinking, gee whiz, like you said, you know, how many thousands of people have got $36 million in cryptocurrency underneath their mattress these days? If they did, it's only down to about, $15 million or less. So you've got to recount. But when you start looking deep into the article, it's interesting what agents say and what reporters get to, but obviously reporters can't put it together because they're not really, they're just property reporters. They don't understand how the industry really works, most of them. A lot do, but most don't. And they miss what could have been a great, article in itself. And that is the admission, or is this an admission to underquoting, Martin? I mean, you know, in one of the paragraphs, it reads, when it first came to the market in October 2020, there were media reports the guide was $33 to $35 million. However, Coombs this week said the asking price back then was actually $40 million. And there had been early offers of $37 million and $38 million. So I thought, actually, that's an interesting statement. That's an interesting paragraph. I want to unpack, you know, what was going on. And of course, I went to the history, the other historical information that we get from CoreLogic. And lo and behold, Martin, there it is. It's the receipt. It's etched in stone. It's etched in blood. The price guide, as of the 22nd of October 2020. Was $35 million. So again, we ask the question, is this a case of underquoting? And also, is the owner going to get more than those offers because he's rejected the offer, of 37 and 38? And that's what we were seeing. We see a lot, not only in this case, but in many cases when the property's running hot. Yeah, you get the guy, the low underquoting guides that the agents put out verbally, in writing or otherwise. And then when you get to the auction, the auctioneer asks the agent, you know, when we're already 10, 15% above the guide, asks the agent if the property is on the market yet. And often the case is, no, it's not. Then why the hell did you give me that guide in the first place, you dipstick? Yeah, so this is it, man. It's all there. Yeah, the receipts are there. You just can't get away with it. The truth will set us free, Martin.
Well, but it's a great case study, and it shows you that, the valuations can be a bit wonky, and you got to go back to this, well, underquoting, you know. It's out there, isn't it?
Well, look, it is. And the thing is, as we've been saying, it's just one of those things that you've got to go, you've more so than ever, you just got to prepare yourself. I shared a video earlier on today about a property that we just inspected, on behalf of a client. And this thing, what I shared was after the first initial claim, but this thing had bamboo growing in the family room and in the kitchen and in the downstairs laundry, through the wall, coming through the wall. So I know they're going to get rid of all that material evidence right now, but bamboo is one.
Persistent,
and even if you cut it down, if you got under the house and you just cut everything down, because I couldn't even get under the house. It was like those bamboo traps in the jungles of Vietnam. You know, it was just it just phenomenal. I just couldn't get to it. I wanted to see what was happening. I'll get to it next week when after they do a bit more clearing, perhaps, and see what's going on underneath the house. But you could just imagine, even if you got rid of all that, with a bit of moisture, you know, this bamboo is going to eventually start growing through your wall again. It's going to be very interesting. So be more cautious. That's what our people have got to be: more cautious, more diligent in the background information that they gather. By all means, get your own building inspector to inspect. Otherwise, you could be in all sorts of trouble, and that's where you don't want to be. When the market is going backwards, and it's going to cost you a fortune to rectify things, in a few months' time. In many cases.
Unless what you do is you let the bamboo grow up, and then you sort of put other plants around it, and you make an outdoor indoor feature of it.
Or you can get yourself a panda bear, and then charge.
Yeah, exactly.
I could dress Dusty and Evan up as little pandas, and they could be climbing all over the bamboo. Flooring, all sorts of things come to mind.
I know, exactly right. But no, it's a very important point. Now let's then move on the conversation. You know, you posed the question, and it's a very important question: what would need to happen under a Labour government for property prices to remain low, right, or go lower, or whatever, right? Because you know, there is going to be a very interesting debate over the next few months, right? Now, they basically had a policy to pull more first-time buyers in and use this 40% government-backed scheme. And there's a few other things. And, of course, if they tie up the with the Greens because they don't get the full numbers, there's that 1 million properties to be built or whatever, right? The other interesting thing, the Labour guys back, the responsible lending obligations will now stay rather because they were trying to be removed by the other side. So it's an interesting question. Where do we go from here?
It is. And this is where it comes back to, you know, when we spoke about the levers that no matter what government took the helm moving forward from Saturday, what were they going to be forced to do? Because the biggest thing, as you pointed out in your tweet, and obviously, it's very important in your response, is I reckon Treasury / RBA will be trying to keep the bubble up due to financial stability risks. If it imploded, perhaps we will see where true power lays. And that is very, very profound, because at the end of the day, what do? Do you let the bubble blow up, as a lot of people as our Twitterati want it to happen? Or do you keep on pumping it, keep on feeding it, and give it a soft landing or cushion it by one way or another, and start pulling those levers? Immigration, start talking to the banks about what the Liberal government obviously was talking to them about as well. You know, easing up on their lending criteria. Mm. What do you do? Because it comes to the point where no matter how much property prices start dropping, you know, the banks are going to make it harder and harder for you to borrow, and it really disenfranchises the first-time buyers, which are the ones that are wanting to come in. We want more so to come into the market and have something, you know, and start living the great Australian dream. So what are they going to do?
Well, yes, very interesting, because, of course, there is an argument to say, well, maybe the RBA will actually do a term funding facility version 2.0. So that's the very cheap money that they handed through to the banks last year. There was an interesting speech today from the RBA. I might do a separate show on it later. But one of the interesting things is the term funding facility needs to be paid back by the banks over the next couple of years, right? Which means that the banks are going to actually need to actually put their mortgage rates up because their funding costs are going to go up. So one thing they could do is to feed in more cheap money, taxpayer money, effectively, to support cheap borrowing from the banks. The other thing they can do is to allow the banks to, like they did through COVID, flex the repayment terms, make the loans over a longer period, or forgo interest and, you know, for a period of time to help people through. They can pull more people in, you know, through these stimulation programs, first-time buyer schemes, 40% schemes, just suck more people in, try and get them to come in. I mentioned migration earlier on. I'm sure they'll open the migration taps to try and bring more people through. All of those various things. But the trouble is, Edwin, this is all now being done in the context of rising interest rates, right? Mm. And that's different. That's the new game changer, in my view. So even if they do all of these things with rising interest rates, the borrowing power of individuals is being reduced. More people are going to find it harder to make those mortgage repayments. In fact, if rates go up very much, repayments as a proportion of income will be harder than they've been ever. So it's going to be really tricky, and I wonder whether it will come unglued or whether it won't come unglued. But actually, the real question is what happens to mortgage rates and interest rates. It may well be that interest rates go up a bit, but in about 18 months, maybe a year from now, the economy starts to tank, prices have slid, and then they start cutting rates again because they're actually worried about a recession. So it's a very interesting and tricky situation. But they'll pull all the levers to try and stop the bubble from going pop, because nobody wants to be on the parade ground and be responsible for the pop.
No, exactly. And at the same time, you can imagine how many politicians from Greens, from the Greens to the Teals to the Libs to the to their own their own group, how many of them are putting their hand up to see property prices fall? When they all own investment properties, I dare say I could count them, in one hand. So realistically, the Labor government, what they need to do is they really need to encourage more listings to come on the market. They need to, these were my points. They need to encourage more listings to come on the market. They need to basically, which means encouraging the investors to sell, and we're talking about predominantly homes more so than apartments. Encourage the empty nesters to downsize in order to make the bigger homes more listings on market, means more choice, prices will drop to an extent for these young families that they want to move into the bigger homes, build more homes. But what do all these things mean, Martin? All these things really is what we've been caning the previous government, basically stoking the fire, adding more fuel to the fire to increase prices. So yep. It's, as you say, it's really a juggling act up until the ice gets so thin that they can't juggle anymore, or the wire that they're treading on is so thin and flimsy, or the twine just keeps on snapping away. To the point where you're only trying to juggle balls of fire on dental floss, and it's going to be very, very hard for the Labor government to keep it all together. I mean, what do they do? That is the big conundrum.
So I've got one other observation. If they were smart, they would actually be thinking about all the vacant property that's around the place.
That's right.
Right? Because we know that there's probably 1.2 million properties that aren't actually occupied at the moment. And many of those are actually deliberately vacant, right? Or they've been built, but nobody's actually wanted to buy them, right? Now, the way to solve the housing affordability problem is to bring those back into the market, right? And actually, you could do that. And if you did that smartly, that might actually give you a get out of jail card with some of these other things that we've been touching on, right? Because it might actually then start accessing, providing access to people who want to get more properties, and that means they could actually go get a mortgage and those sorts of things. Prices may come down a little, but that's not a bad thing. But it wouldn't necessarily be a property crash. So I'll be looking to see whether, in fact, anybody in a position of power starts thinking about the empty properties, because you know and I know that there are thousands and thousands and thousands across Australia that should be being lived in but aren't being lived in at the moment.
100%. And you've got to step on toes. You've got to step on toes. First and foremost, you've got to step on investors' toes. Again, this is something, and it's going to be those from the Labor wing, those from the Liberal wing, those from the Greens, the Teals, and every other Tom, Dick and Harry that's a politician. I mean, that's it. I've made up my mind 100%. My next lifetime, you know, I'm gonna, you know, tell the Almighty, listen, I want to come back as either a plumber slash carpenter, you know, because that's a perfect combination as far as I'm concerned, or a politician. You know, it's one of the two. There's no two ways about it for me. That's it. That's how to get with, preferably a politician in the US though, because you only come out of there with hundreds of thousands or a few million. You come out of there with hundreds of millions of dollars. that's my call, man. But there's something else that they need to also do, and that is step on the toes of the local politicians, and bring them to task, because there's so much derelict property about the place that could potentially, you know, if they pressed the local LGAs to basically tune down a lot of the building codes that are just there for to stifle the development. And I'm not even necessarily talking about medium density. I'm just simply talking about turning these old fibro homes that do sit on 600 square meters of land. You could still split the blocks up or turn them into duplexes, because there are certain parts of Sydney you need 450 square meters. So therefore you need 900 plus the handles or the setbacks in order to subdivide the block. In other areas, you've got blocks of land that are on Torrens Title on 240, 260 square meters, and in other suburbs you can build a duplex or dual lock on 600. I mean, it's all over the shop. But we were going to share tonight, but I have to take our viewers have to take a rain check on it. But we will definitely share it next week as to the costs or the percentage costs that developers or builders pay from the purchase of the land to finish construction. How much of that goes into the government's coffers, whether it be local, state, and federal government, and how much of that is really costing? So if they were even able to do that, like you said, it's going to reduce the value of property around the area, because again, we're going to get with more properties on market, more choice, and things are going to take a bit longer to sell. But that's not a bad. That's not a bad thing overall, and it's not a bad thing for this current government to put out there, because if anything, they're going to get a lot of support. You know, people, all those things. That's just one of the things that I didn't put on that list that I shared with you a few days back. Is something that I think it needs to be considered. And then again, because of the simple fact that a lot of these homes are just so derelict and so dilapidated that they need to be knocked down. And not build something, just one dwelling on a quarter acre block or anything above 600, but you know, be allowed to build two dwellings so that, you know, people can stay within the communities of choice. Where do the downsizers go, Mark? Where do the empty nesters go? They don't want to go, 10 suburbs away or four suburbs away or three suburbs away into some foreign land. You know, when they've spent 40, 50 years in the local community?
No, I agree. And I just will add one other thing, Airbnb. I think the Airbnb whole situation needs to be looked at too, because that's another example where we're seeing people being kicked out of rental properties so that they can then be let out under Airbnb terms, because the investor then makes a lot more. But of course, that puts another property away, out of reach. So, you know, I think there are things that could be done if there was an intent to really solve this rather than just keep the bubble bubbling away. But of course, is there the political appetite to do it? That's the key question.
Definitely. With the Airbnb, I think there's going to be, we're going to see it over the next, I'd say 12 to 18 months, we'll see a change in that appetite. And the reason why I say it is because the more people start venturing abroad, for the holidays, rather than staying locally, there's going to be less occupancy under the Airbnb. The Airbnb just got swamped locally, because don't forget we couldn't go anywhere up to a month or so ago. We just couldn't venture out. So when that in itself starts being taken care of, People are going to start taking holidays abroad, to the islands, to Fiji, to New Zealand, to go down to Tasmania, visit our cousins down there, or do whatever. They're going to be going away. So that will hopefully put long term rentals back into the arena as well, which is so desperately needed. I know the mountains, it just being on fire with Airbnb. I mean, there's some properties that I've been introduced to by different agents, I'm gobsmacked that they're getting close to 2,500 a week, and it's not like they're being let out 7 days a week, and this is just really only by a matter of 4 or 5 days in the week. It's just phenomenal incomes, and investors or people that own them, I mean, that's for them it's more of a monetary choice than it is a moral. So it's just something each to their own.
I agree, very important. And then we should just talk about statistics briefly. I mean, basically there weren't that much going on this weekend because of the election, but nevertheless the clearance rates, according to Tarika, down, they're always down.
Yeah, they're always down, and this one coming up is going to be another key indicator for to see how we're going to be really venturing into into the freezing days of winter. Are the property prices going to be frozen for the rest of winter, or are they going to be continue to be liquid and fluid and going all sorts of directions? But yeah, it is interesting. It was that both the numbers and the rates, and I think Tarek captures it very, very well on a week by week basis, and that's why we share it, because it's more real. I'd love to share also Louis Christopher's, but he doesn't bring his out until Tuesday, until the other numbers are accounted, because he takes a broader view of the Sydney metro area than what a lot of other the information that I get, the information that Tara gets. We ours is more central to it's smaller than Louis's.
I actually spoke to Louis, and end of June he's going to probably come back on and do another show with us. So we'll keep an eye out for that. But talking about keeping an eye out, what's this? Edwin Almeida in the AFR.
Yes, that's it. I've gone bullish, man. That's it. Yeah, I'm gonna start a TikTok show now. I'm back in. I have been quoted on the AFR for about over 12 months now. I started, now that's it. This is a sign. I've got to start my own TikTok show again and teach people how to buy 10 properties when the market's going down and not go broke. I'm thinking about those things.
But obviously Michael was looking at our shows, right, because we were speaking some weeks ago about the young buyers being pushed out of the market. Well, they finally cottoned on.
That definitely. Look, you and I know, Martin, that whatever we put out on a Monday end up being talked about at the end of the week or the week after, and they follow you very, they follow you and me, through different accounts, that not through their own accounts but through other accounts, and they see what we write about. Look, we know,
we're just trendsetters. We just can't help it, can we? Right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Look, it was. There's a little bit more to the story, but what he shared was good. He's very he's a diplomat. But he was good just to be out there again and put our thoughts and ideas across and put out to the greater community that don't get to see our shows, and they get to follow us on Twitter and in the greater community. And just a small story, like I said, there's a lot more to it. But they captured it, and
congratulations, and good to see. And I guess before we close, the tip of the week, it's a really simple one: get it in writing.
Get in writing. Yeah, as you know, and as I shared last week or so, with regards to what we're going through, it's the importance of getting things in writing and documenting things are critical. Because it's going to pay off, where if people make certain certain assertions and they give certain guarantees, in writing is a stronger holds more weight in a court. But you know, depending on up to our price point, will determine whether it's being heard in the tribunal, or goes beyond. But from where we are, what we've got, what we wrote on the day, is definitely helping and supportive to the claim that's being made against the agent. So yeah, get in writing, where possible, and that includes text, email, obviously a lot stronger, and physically, and keep the pamphlets and documentation, as you and I know that the case that's been put together over in Queensland with regards to assertions and guarantees that agents made with in relation to views. If you're going to be paying $1 million for a view, well, there you go. There's the claim.
Exactly.
It's in the brochures. It helps you.
Specifically, if the agent says no, there's no asbestos here or anything like that. Get it in writing. A word is cheap, right? Something that's written gives you much more leverage if it's wrong later. And unfortunately, sometimes some agents do shoot from the hip.
Yeah, look, and they're going to get they're going to get so desperate. They're going to be desperate enough to get the sale, because as you and I said, and I've said over and over again, the first and foremost, the agent's trying to protect their commission. They're not necessarily trying to protect the vendor; they're trying to protect their commission. Yep. And if you can navigate through that, you can then understand how adversarial the whole process of buying and selling property is, and some may a very astute. Some may call them astute. Some may call them a professional. Others may call them a weasel. You can call them all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, as long as you know the rules, when you step into the ring, you're not going to come out with a bleeding nose.
Yeah, great advice, Edwin. Well, thanks very much. Great conversation again tonight. And we'll do it all again next week, by which time, God knows what's going to happen next.
Hold on to your toupee, Martin. Hold on to your toupee.
Yeah, I will.
I'm going to go out and buy an Italian dictionary. So, do you want one? I'll send it down to you.
Yeah. Well, we probably should look up a few words just to try to get on side, as it were, right?
That's it.
Cappuccino. There you go. That's mine.
That's it. All right, man. Thank you.
Take care. Pleasure. Cheerio. Bye bye.
Ciao.